From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Thank you, Kathy Dwallet, for supporting me and this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Do you want to hear your name here at the top of the show? Are you enjoying this podcast? Would like to help me make more episodes? Then head over to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It means a great deal to me and you will get to headline the show just like Kathy did today. Welcome to episode number 156, where I am joined by extraordinary woman Hannah Boetius. Hannah has lived with type 1 diabetes as her constant companion for 35 years, and it was as if her whole life fell into place when she started eating real food in 2011. Since her wake-up call, she has gained much of her health back thanks to simply eating the right things and nutrients for her body. Hannah is an international speaker, writer, and action taker who loves diabetes topics that are off the beaten track. She's passionate to find motivational and inspiring ways to bring about a change in diabetes management. Through her own company, Hannah Diabetes Expert, she's inspired thousands of people with diabetes to live a healthier life by sharing her own story and experiences, as well as the puzzle pieces she's helped others to find. She has a profound understanding of how things like nutrition and lifestyle choices can balance diabetes. She is also the founder of the first interactive 100% real food event called the Low Carb Universe. It's Europe's healthiest event. I really enjoyed my chat with Hannah. She's what us Brits would call full of beans, and I left the conversation feeling energized and uplifted. What a gal. I hope you enjoy it as much too. Welcome, Hannah, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me here. This is such a pleasure.
Well, it's good to see you again. We're not exactly neighbours, but compared to people I often record with, we're quite close neighbours. You're just up in Switzerland. I'm in the middle of France.
Yes, that's very true. And I mean, the weather, I'm sure you have the same today, but...
Disgusting. It has been raining here for, I don't know, at least 2 weeks with the tiniest spots of respite between. I was just complaining to somebody at the supermarket, I think, the other day. Normally, this time of year, up until actually middle of October, I have still been able to go swimming.
Yes. Same.
You know, I have a lake not far from me, and it has not only been able to go swimming, but it has been lovely.
Yeah.
You know, the temperatures have been in the high 20s, the water's still been warm, and it has actually been a great pleasure. It's always been my favourite time of year, September into October. But this year, halfway through September, it was like, nope, that's it, we're done. Bring on the rain.
We're done with this. Mic drop out. Yeah, I got a Facebook notification or a reminder of, you know, it collects what you posted the years before yesterday. And I almost cried because I'm like, I said 11 years ago that it was 26 degrees and sunny. And I'm like, oh no.
Right.
What a different world.
Yeah, I've got to the point where I'm starting to doubt myself and think that no, you were making that up. It's not usually that way, but absolutely. And often actually here, and so quite possibly where you are too, although obviously it starts getting colder, the weather often actually is nice right up until Christmas. It's those first few months that can be really sort of grueling to get through. But so, yeah, I am very disappointed with the weather.
Yeah, it could be better. I mean, that's the one thing 2020 could have given us, right?
That's true.
You know, nice fall, a warm, nice. I'm not much of a winter person. I live in the wrong country, technically.
You do. Although, does the whole of Switzerland reliably get snow, or do you still need to be up in the mountains? Because I used to reliably get snow every year. I've been here, 17 years in December, and every year without fail, I couldn't tell you when it would be. It would be somewhere between December through to March. There would be reliable, heavy snowfall to that picture perfect look. You know, I've got some fabulous pictures of my place here, and I used to have a little border terrier at the time who used to get lost, you know, because he was under a foot of snow. And we haven't had anything more than a smattering for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah,
but I don't know where you are. Maybe you get a bit more. Kind of miss that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when winter is as grey as it's now, it's kind of depressing, to be honest.
Just miserable.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm right outside of Zurich, and last winter, we didn't even get snow, not even once. Mm. So yes, in order to have like really reliable snow, you will have to go up to the mountains, but I'm quite pleased, maybe as long as it's not, you know, 30, 50 centimeters of snow on the streets.
That's right. Yeah, I'm at the foothills of the Auvergne. So same, actually, if you were to take a 2-hour train ride up into the Auvergne, you'd be skiing because it's ski country. But yeah, it's one of those things, snowfall, isn't it, that it's really nice for it to come down when you don't need to go anywhere just for the weekend and then go away again.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree. It's a little bit, you know, it's sort of a holiday weather.
Yeah,
you know, when you have nothing else to do but to sit and enjoy it, or, you know, be out,
go make snowmen,
or whatever. But yeah, make snowmen or snow angels. Personal favorite. Anyway, but apart from that, I can really, you know, it could be summer right up until about end of November,
yeah,
and then snowy sort of December, January, and then we start heating up again. I'd be fine with that.
Be nice, wouldn't it, if we could dictate things? Yeah. Now, as a Brit, I spend most of the year complaining about the weather. It's either too hot, too cold, too wet.
Swedes are the same. It's fine. I'm used to it.
Well, we've met on and off a few times at conferences, but I think we first crossed each other's paths, and you actually did appear briefly on the podcast, I went around getting little snippets from other attendees at the PHC conference in, I think it was 2018.
Yes, that was on the rooftop.
That's right.
At the mingling party. It was beautiful.
Drinking a little bit of champagne and mingling with people. It was great fun.
That's never wrong, is it?
No. How could it be? Yes, I went round with my friend Louise. She was there going ahead of me, clearing the path, asking people if they would have a bit of a chat with me. And I was carrying around all my equipment and getting people to share a few snippets about the conference, which was fantastic. It was the first time I'd been. I don't know if it was the first time you'd attended, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was my first time as well at that particular conference. And I really enjoy that conference because of the sort of mix of both really high profile people, but also, you know, the normal people stories and all the people that you meet and all the great companies that are exhibiting. It's a great concept.
Mm.
So well done, Sam and company.
Yes, he does a fantastic job, of course, obviously, along with his team and all the ambassadors and the speakers who are all basically a part of that organization, most of them, aren't they? They're really doing a lot in the UK, and which is having a ripple effect around the world as well, which is absolutely fantastic. In fact, the PHC has set up, hasn't it, in other countries? I believe there's PHC Australia. Is there PHC America now as well?
The last thing I heard was that they're working on it, but I don't know how far they've gotten. But yes, it's in the works, or has been in the works at least.
Mm. And it's a really good system because they're a much broader appeal to the majority base. You know, often people talk about keto and say, oh, it will never work because it can't be a diet for everybody. I mean, obviously, in theory, it absolutely could. But an easier low carb absolutely could be. And they basically, don't they, just take that broader appeal, low carb, real food base, which really absolutely should be applied to everybody.
Absolutely. And what I really like with I guess it's Dr. David Unwin's originally, but the concept of showing how much sugar there is in each so-called normal, for example, breakfast food. And you would never think, if you're not very involved and have counted carbs for your whole entire life, which some of us have. Anyway, just to see sort of bran flakes, for example, how many stupid teaspoons of sugar it is in one portion, in one serving that no one ever keeps to anyway. It's an eye-opener.
Yes, I think it's a fantastic resource that it's come under fire, of course, via the...
of course, everything does.
Ridiculous newspaper in the United Kingdom, which we won't name because it's just vile. But, you know, resources like that are fantastic. You know, they're never meant to be precise. They're meant to be a really easy way to understand visually, quickly, what's going on.
Yeah,
that's what they're there for. And they absolutely fulfill that 100%. So, yes, it was a great day when it got taken on by the NHS. So, you know, my hope is that it gets reinstated because, as you said, it's a fantastic resource that everybody should be using. And it was getting rolled out across doctor surgeries. So, but you were there really strongly representing Low Carb Universe. And we're going to get to that because I want to talk about that a lot, because out of all the conferences out there, that is the one that I'm most envious about, that it's right up there on my dream attendance list. So we'll get to that.
But
what we're here to do is to talk about you. So why don't you take it away wherever you would like to start sharing your story.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much. The floor is mine. I love
it
that
is.
Part. Anyway, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes 35 years ago this year, despite clearly being, 25. So that is a funky little thing going on there. No, but I was 2 years old at the time. This was in the 80s, of course, 1985. And it was the height of the low-fat era. And basically, when you're diagnosed as a diabetic in 1980, if you so much as sniff a pat of butter, you're basically dead. You know, it's the usual, the norm.
The 80s brought us so much when it came to music. I mean, I'm yes. You know, those are my teen years, so the 80s is absolutely my era, but not when it comes to fat.
No, but the dietary recommendations. Yeah, of course. I'll get to that. I'll get to my thoughts of that. But the dietary recommendations also, of course, dictated that I got plus points for having fruit after my meal, adding more sugar to the already 60 grams of carbs with every meal as a two-year-old. How do you even pack that many carbs into a two-year-old?
Wow.
Anyway, I digress. Also, you know, drinking skimmed or low-fat milk to it, adding more sugar. Really, really good idea. Plus points by all dietitians everywhere. Sarcasm aside, well, I can't really leave sarcasm aside ever, but as much as I can, this set me up for quite a terrible start. I mean, my parents, amazing, amazing job taking care of me, hunting me down with syringes and needles and poking my finger. And back then, we didn't have these like teeny tiny needles that we have now. You know, in my mind, they were about a foot or 30 centimeters long, and you know, you had to chisel them in with a hammer. Oh, that's that was my sort of understanding of syringes back then. Probably wasn't quite that bad, but anyway, so none of the technology that we know today within the diabetes management world were available then. Insulin pumps, you know, you carried them on your back, sort of thing as a backpack, CGM, continuous glucose monitoring systems, you can just forget because that wasn't available at all. Getting a blood sugar measurement took minutes.
Wow.
For the big, you know, machine to like open up and calibrate it and pricking your finger, getting enough blood because then was a big amount of blood that was needed, getting that on the test strip, you know, it was a whole process. And I mean, of course, I'm thankful that I didn't have to survive the first few years with only urine glucose testing, because that I think they actually brought out the first at-home testing kit sort of around 85, 84, something like that. So I was one of the first ones to have it. So I'm happy. I mean, it could have been a lot worse. I could have been born 100 years earlier and not survived, because the invention or the finding of insulin is only 99 years old this year. Mm. So in that way, I was very, very lucky to be born when I was. And it could have been a lot worse than it was. However, not saying that the advice we got, that my parents got, that we all followed without thinking twice, because the doctors knew, right? They were supposed to know better and know how to take care of diabetes. Also, at that time, of course, we were told at every single appointment that a cure is just around the corner. You know, it's just 5 to 10 years away. 35 years later, I'm not holding my breath anymore. I'm not waiting for it. I don't, to be frank, I don't think I'll see it in my lifetime even. But, you know, please prove me wrong. Anyone who can, that'd be fantastic. And until that day, I'm looking forward to sort of more management tools, easier management tools, more integrative management tools that can help make life with diabetes easier.
So I'm really fascinated to hear then it's certainly not a unique perspective,
no.
But it's going to be very interesting to hear for people who are so familiar with the technology now. I mean, when you were talking just then about just testing your blood glucose, yeah. I mean, I know how easy is that to do now? You know, I do it on a regular basis. It takes seconds. It's not exactly painless, but it's almost, I mean, comparatively for you, it must be completely painless. So I'd really be interested in hearing about the progression of the treatment and the equipment that's been available to you over the years. That's going to fascinate me.
Absolutely. Well, I was started on sort of older, so-called older types of insulin now. Then they were the big thing. So I was on 2 injections a day when I was small or a child. And basically this meant, because each insulin, of course, as they do today as well, has a certain activity profile.
Mm-hmm.
So they become active in a certain amount of time, they stay active a certain amount of time, and they sort of half-life off into the body somewhere or gets broken down in a certain time. And this has changed tremendously since I was diagnosed 35 years ago. because then you really had to feed the insulin, as we called it, because at a certain point of time, that insulin was going to hit and you needed to feed that and eat right then, or you would go into a deep hypoglycemia and probably, with the technology available then, not be very well off.
Yes, I was thinking that as you were describing what was happening, you have to time your eating to your injection rather than the other way around.
Yeah. Yes, I remember always every morning without a doubt, whether it was Sunday, Thursday or Monday, I was woken up at 8 o'clock, got my insulin shot, good morning, honey. And then at exactly spot on 8:30 in the morning, breakfast had to be on the table and I would have to be sitting by the table eating it, because otherwise I would get a hypoglycemia and wouldn't.
Like your life depended on it, quite literally. Is it incredible to think?
Literally, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's actually where the sort of carb recommendations for people with diabetes come from.
Mm.
It is the fact they're still sort of stuck in the mindset that you had to so-called feed the insulin. Whereas today, you know, it's so flexible and we have so many tools and so many fantastic insulins depending on your lifestyle, depending on how you want to manage your diabetes, depending on how what fits you the best, you as an individual. It's coming a lot more. So we're going from sort of a very, or I'm hoping we're going from a very blanket statement, this is the insulin that everyone is using, to sort of a very individualized, very lifestyle, hopefully, centered diabetes management. But the steps between there have been many and are still going to be many.
And a very real and understandable fear of hypos.
Yeah.
I imagine it depends a lot on the type one person you're talking to, probably how old they are and, you know, what they're used to in their history. So it's going to be very understandable for somebody your age or older, for example, who has those memories, who was told you've got to feed the insulin and you've got to eat like your life depends on it. So I can completely understand where that fear comes from.
Yeah, and especially because you had to eat whether you were hungry or not.
Mm.
Those 60 grams of carbs had to get in you somehow. No matter really how, didn't really care how, just as long as they were in so that the body could, or the carbs could meet the insulin. And I really do believe that that's where the old sort of recommendations come from. Today, as I said, it's completely different. And I feel like there's room for improvement, a lot of room, because people with diabetes still get very similar recommendations as I got in 1985.
Crazy.
How silly is that?
Mm. So when did things start to change? Because, you know, I'm starting to think of the very real potential dangers at school, for example. I imagine it's very difficult for a parent who's been used to being able to completely control what's going on with your blood sugar and the dangers of what happens if it goes low, to actually release that child into the wild and let them go to school under somebody else's care. I imagine that would be a very stressful time. How was that experience for you, and when did things really start improving?
Yeah, that's kind of a long story. I'll try to keep it short in the interest of time. But basically, I went to school like everyone else. I went to daycare. I went to all of these things. And somehow, by the grace of something holy, I am still here. I don't really understand how sometimes, because there were some very sticky situations. And adding to this, I was very, very afraid of needles. Actually, I was petrified of needles.
Not surprised.
So I didn't learn to inject myself until I was 10 years old. So 8 years after my diagnosis. And that only through the help of a wonderful, compassionate, caring, amazing nurse who sat with me 2 afternoons a week, working through the phobia in different ways, you know, giving me different exercises, giving me different tasks to do, and, oh, can you see the needle without the cap and stuff like that? So really from the basics up. And she really, you know, that's still one of my favorite, you know, healthcare practitioner memories, that she was so helpful and she really, really helped me get over that, because it was petrifying and it was terrible for my parents too, having to chase me around because I was so afraid. And I didn't, in the beginning, this was before school and everything, but in the beginning, I didn't understand that they were actually saving my life. I thought they punished me somehow. So that whole dynamic also was thrown off because I didn't understand what was going on, and they just wanted to take care of me and manage my diabetes as well as they could with the tools available and the information available. Anyway, I learned to take my own insulin at 10 years old. And after that, you know, I thought I could, you know, now I got it. I finally got it. Big lie. That was a big, big lie. I finally could go to like sleepovers and stuff. Of course, because no one wanted their parents there for, you know, coming in to give someone a shot. So I finally could go, and then sort of school trips and stuff like that. It gave me more freedom, that already. But of course, it didn't give me the management that I may be used to today. So during my teenage years, I felt like nothing that I tried worked. I followed the rule book that I was given by healthcare professionals, dietitians, doctors, nurses, all of this stuff with, you know, the so-called appropriate amount of carbs, no fat, of course, still, and nothing helped. I tried different carbs, I tried different exercises, I tried different insulins, I tried to the point of where I was just, I'll just give up. There's no point. There's absolutely zero point of me trying, because everything I do comes slapping me in the face like nobody's business. It's no point that I even try. So I completely quit checking my blood sugar, first of all, because that was just the depressing part of my day. And back then, also, you were very judged on your blood sugar values, for example, by doctors or by my parents, of course, too. They were super scared that I didn't maybe take care of myself as I should, or that as I was expected to.
That's going to get a great reaction, isn't it, being judgmental of a teenager?
Right. It's not, in hindsight, 2020 vision and all that stuff, it's not maybe the best way.
Well, it's certainly not the best way to get the results you want to get, put it that way.
No, definitely not. And after I stopped taking, measuring my blood sugar to a certain extent, I also stopped taking the insulin, because why try? There's no point. Absolutely no point. I was so depressed about it. Technically, I didn't get any help. No one really knew about sort of chronic condition, depression, and especially diabetes management and depression. Back then, it wasn't very talked about. It's starting to be now.
I was going to say, it must be a very common partner to type 1.
Yeah, I mean, in 35 years, no healthcare professional has ever talked to me about the mental aspect of living with a chronic condition.
Wow.
Something that I'm very passionate about talking about now, when I have, you know, my own,
I bet,
you know, portal and my own sort of soapbox to stand on. But really, the sort of mental aspect, how do you handle living with something that is with you 24/7, 365, every second of every day, it's at the back of your head. How am I doing? What is my blood sugar at? What am I doing now? What did I do a couple of hours ago? What did I eat? What am I going to eat? How much insulin do I have on board? Did I take my insulin? Did I forget? Oh, did I hydrate properly? You know, it's always
exhausting.
There's always something going on. And it is exhausting some days, unless you find sort of tools and tricks to work with it and to help yourself in sort of a mental, in a mental way. Yeah. So when I was a teenager, this wasn't talked about at all. It was just sort of swept under the carpet and hoping for the best that everyone's going to make it. And yeah, it took me very many years to get back into some sort of rhythm, some sort of care, some sort of way to manage both mentally, but emotionally, physically, blood sugar wise, diabetes wise, all of it.
There must have been a fair amount of luck involved there, I imagine, because it sounds like you could have very easily got very ill, if not died.
And I did, and not died, clearly. Got very seriously ill. I was in and out of hospitals more than I care to admit or remember, both with the diabetic ketoacidosis, of course, because that is due to the lack of insulin in the body. And that's why relatively many type 1s are diagnosed through diabetic ketoacidosis. And that's when the body doesn't have enough insulin in the body, in the system, to sort of work with all the sugar and all the carbs and all the glycogen that is expelled through the liver. so that the body then starts releasing fatty acids so that the brain somehow has something to work with in some sort of capacity. But of course, that is super, super dangerous and can be fatal. Mm. So that's nothing to aim for at all. Yeah, so there were very many questionable moments. And that's part of the reason why I'm so vocal about type 1 nowadays. Maybe that's why I'm so passionate about sharing how to manage better and how to use lifestyle measures to help your management in, you know, in addition to the medical part. There's so much you can do as a type 1 and as a diabetic person in just generally, but especially as a type 1 that, you know, no one really talks about. And it perplexes me because had I known back then what I know today, life would have been easier. As a teenager, it's never easy, but it would have been easier.
Right. So when was that moment? There probably wasn't a single moment, but when did things start to change and start going your way? Was it somebody who helped? Was it something you saw, something you read? When did that change start to happen? Because there's clearly a happy ending here.
Well, I'm still here. I'm still alive. How did we get there? Yeah, no, it was actually one person, one event exactly. I don't know the exact date and time, but I know exactly where I was. And that was after another, you know, it must have been another 10 years of struggling with different ways and different carbs and different, you know, all of the same things again. I'm like, well, I don't have a choice. I have to take care of this somehow. Finally got to that realization. And so I tried everything again, different carbs, different insulins, different exercises, you know, moving my body, blah, blah, blah. But I just had the wrong handbook for me as an individual. I know that there are people with diabetes out there who live and thrive on, you know, these normal recommendations. And that's fine. That's fantastic. Whoever manages to get a normal, healthy level of blood sugar, normal, healthy, happy, healing levels of blood sugar with any type of diabetes, but especially type 1, they're heroes. They're superheroes in my book, and no one applauds them more than I do. But my way of getting there came through that I had a professional burnout, of course, because my blood sugar was out of whack. How could I ever concentrate on anything or give energy to, you know, 60-hour a week job when I didn't have the energy to even basically get out of bed in the morning because my blood sugar was so bad? Anyway, so I had a burnout, and after sort of spending a year in bed, trying to get over it on my own, of course, because I was a good girl and was going to do this on my own and without any help, I started thinking, so what do I really want to do with my life? Where do I want to be? Who do I want to be? Who can I help anyone? And so I thought to myself, well, hey, at that point, I had 26 years of obsessively checking nutritional labels, obsessively thinking about nutrition because I had to. It was part of my management, not to the point of an eating disorder, at least not diagnosed. But, you know, it becomes part of your life when every single gram of anything that you eat matters for your blood sugar management. Anyway, so I came to the conclusion that nutrition would be a fantastic field for me to get into. And so I did. I started a course here in Zurich to become a nutrition coach, much along the lines of the IIN and all of these institutions, but sort of a local version. By the way, in my fourth language, which is German. Anyway, not important.
Four languages. No, that needs a moment to, be very
I didn't want to brag, but it sort of came up.
So what I know the four. Swedish, English, German, French.
No French. I've never had a French lesson in my life.
No way.
Finnish is the fourth one.
You can't live in Switzerland and not speak French. You need five.
Yes, well, I have started Spanish, so that's sort of my fifth one. But anyway.
Shame on you.
I know. I need to get my act together. I started this course and it was very involving and I got completely thrown on my backside because I thought I knew things about nutrition. My teacher is still very much into the sort of clean eating, paleo sort of lifestyle, which is cool. And, you know, that's where I started too in the end. But
good start. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was a great sort of first step into this kind of a world and this kind of a lifestyle. And we were talking about carbs and insulin and how that works in the body and, you know, all very fundamental things to understand when you work with nutrition. And he pointed me out in front of a class and he said, "Hannah, you don't even make insulin. If I were you, I'd really think twice about what I put in my mouth." Mm. And that, my dear friends and listeners, that was my aha moment. Mm. I'm like, holy beep. Could it be that easy? Could it be that I haven't had the right tools to work with? Could it be that basically, in my then opinion, maybe still a little bit, that everyone has been lying to me for 26 years when it comes to nutrition? Could it be? I got so angry. I got so furious with every single healthcare professional, every single person who had ever given me so-called advice on managing diabetes, because come on, it doesn't work for me. And it should have been evident to someone, you would think, in 26 years. But no, the only thing that was sort of streamlined and sort of brainwashed into me was that carbs, insulin, and maybe move every once in a while for 26 years. Until I started doing my then own research, because gluten and autoimmunity doesn't go very well together, I found out. Mm-hmm. And my dad is also celiac. So, you know, it's in the family. So I left all the gluten stuff, you know, from one day to another. I just left them. And I'm like, okay, let's see what this does. And immediately I saw a difference in my blood sugars. I'm like, oh my world, what is happening? What is happening to these numbers, these catastrophic numbers that I'm not seeing as much anymore? And I'm like, okay, awesome. What's the next step? And then I took away all grains, whether gluten-free or not, just out. And again, I had the same experience. Oh my God, where have these numbers been? Look at this. And then, you know, slowly but surely, I got into sort of a very competitive mindset of how low can I go? And so that I found what really works for me is to keep carbs really as low as possible and eat ample protein and some fat to it. That's sort of, but I started sort of with a very liberal paleo, still, you know, the dried fruits because they're good for you, and sort of the honey because that's also, you know, that's at least natural carbs, it's natural sugar. I laugh now, I didn't laugh then. And sort of done that sort of whole journey from there to where I am today, which is quite, if I can say so myself, is quite remarkable. And how I had to figure out everything myself. And that's why I sort of, after this education to become a nutrition coach, I slowly but surely started working with people with diabetes to sort of not enlighten them, but give them an idea that there is something else out there that is not being talked about. It's not acknowledged, or definitely wasn't then. It's starting slowly now, but it's not really commonly acknowledged yet, that low carb can and is an option for people with diabetes, regardless of type. Type 2 is a little further along in the way, but type 1 is definitely in the middle ages that way, in that low carb is just not recognized yet as widely as it should be, because it is an option. And that's sort of one of my ultimate goals, is that low carb is presented, at least, or mentioned upon diagnosis for a new type 1. And whatever they want, they can show their stupid little food pyramid and, you know, say, this is what we can advise you on. But there is also another way that a lot of people are seeing fantastic results with. Unfortunately, we can't support you, whatever. But, you know, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people out there really having amazing results with the help of low carb.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's giving people the choice.
Yeah.
It almost feels like, it's just sort of, you know, thinking about it, making the medical establishment, giving it a personality and thinking of it as a person. It's almost like they're so set in their ways.
Yeah.
And they really don't want to be proved wrong.
Yeah.
They don't want to be proven. Maybe they've made mistakes, which we all do. So
that's part of learning.
Exactly. Why not say, hey, we were doing the best we could with the information we had, but what we need to accept is we are no longer doing the best we can with the information that's out there. And we need to start thinking about changing. We need to start being more inclusive of the other options that are out there. And we, as in the other people who want to see change, are not actually saying you've got to switch what you're saying right now for tomorrow with what we're saying.
Yeah.
Not saying that. There's room for both. And actually,
yes,
that's the optimal approach, because as you've already said, their approach does work for some people, but it doesn't work for others. And I love how all the best aha moments are something so simple, so obvious, that you say to yourself, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
Why didn't I see that? It's so obvious when you put it to me like that, that what I put in my mouth is really important, because that's going to affect these numbers that I've seen, I've felt powerless to change. That's what I think everyone finds so frustrating.
Yeah.
The good side of it is, of course, that it fuels people like you to get out there and be doing that work. We just need a crossover, so people who are cocooned in the medical establishment world just get to hear about you.
Yeah,
that's the crossover we need.
Yeah, and just to be ultra clear about this, I mean, for me, it's I'm not out there to convert every single person with diabetes to low carb, because that is not feasible. There's so many things that would stop a person from starting a low carb lifestyle, and I completely, you know, completely respect that. Completely agree. It's fine. But I think it is very important for each person everywhere, it doesn't matter diabetes or not, but to find their way of getting to a sort of more optimal health than they are maybe perhaps today or perhaps were a couple of years ago. But really to be super cliche about it, to embark on that journey to better health and want that for oneself. And I think that's sort of what I'm lacking when I see, just when I look at people in general, I'm lacking that sort of curiosity that, ooh, you know, there may be steps out there that I could take that I haven't thought of yet. And that's why I sort of, it started with nutrition. It always starts with nutrition, but I sort of developed an 8-part sort of matrix for now, especially for people with diabetes, but of lifestyle measures that can help, that you just need to be aware of and be willing to try if it does something for you. If it doesn't, then you've tried, discarded, it's fine, try the next thing on the list. And that really goes from everything from clearly nutrition and movement, which is, you know, that's as far as healthcare professionals go, and but also through things like hydration and how important that is for blood sugar management, and how important in certain cases nutritional supplements can be, and how important sleep is, and self-love, and the mental aspect of living with a chronic condition. How about stress management? How important it is to have a routine? You know, all of these things that just are not talked about, because I realize it, healthcare professionals have, what is it, 7 minutes per visit, per patient. They don't have time to get into that stuff. They just don't. And then there are people like me and many others out there who need to figure it out themselves. And that's another additional reason why I'm so vocal about it, because it's just not talked about. It's just not talked about. And so, yes, it started with nutrition, but along with it came a whole sort of hurricane of lifestyle measures that may or may not help. And I think it's important to puzzle together a very individual plan for optimal health and to have the interest and curiosity to get there.
I absolutely agree. I think you have to take a holistic approach. I really don't think you can, you know, look at things and try and treat things and manage things in isolation. It might help, but it's never going to work. It's never going to give you the optimal result you're looking for. And just a point you made about the limited time that doctors tend to have to see you. And that is a very real problem. That is the way it is. But just referring back again to the Unwins, and I interviewed Jen Unwin a few weeks back, and this is exactly what they're trying to tackle with their approach, with their GRIN model, to be used to help get over these problems, not to try and change how things are, not to say, well, it's no good, you only have 7 to 10 minutes, you need half an hour to do it properly. No point in doing that, because chances are it's never going to change. How do we work with the 10 minutes we do have?
Yeah.
Here's a model that is going to give you positive results for your, both your patients and for you.
Yeah.
This synergistic relationship that's going to go from being one that's very deflating for both of you to one that feels very positive, that you can make really big changes, especially with the resources. We can do a lot by giving you handouts to take home, but even just show you very quickly, again, going back to those charts with the sugar, I can show you very quickly what your typical breakfast does to you. So you imagine actually how much information could you get across that would be very simple, very meaningful, and could impact massive change for your next 10-minute appointment that you can then build on that and start literally building in a positive way.
Yeah.
It really is possible to make huge changes in a very short period of time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's where I'm also another passion point of mine is that for me, it's so important that you as a patient inform yourself, that you do your research, that you do your due diligence, and you know what works, you know, sort of what you are open for and all this stuff. You become essentially an empowered patient so that you can advocate the best for you. This doesn't matter whatever chronic condition it is, even if it's not chronic, if it's acute, you know, just you are informed, you know what you're dealing with, all of this stuff. So that, and that of course includes things like health literacy, which is not the same everywhere. And I realize that also therapeutic inertia, where you basically are not making the changes to your treatment that you know you need because you don't, you know, it's a whole psychological thing. And also so important for you as a patient to work together with your healthcare professionals, whether that's a GP or an endocrinologist and anything that you need. And I see it really as you as a patient sit at the head of a round table and you have all these experts around you. For me, it's an endocrinologist, an ophthalmologist, a podologist, you know, all of these people that are really involved in making me healthier and that can give me tools, get me knowledge, get me things that I need in order to take care of myself as well as I can. And this doesn't just stop with healthcare professionals, well, as in just doctors and the doctor's office, but it also goes out to, like, for example, a therapist, because it is difficult to live with diabetes 24/7. For example, a personal trainer, if you're interested in getting that, a life coach, all of these people that are, and they need to be aligned with your goals rather than the other way around. Mm. And that is what's so important. You know, I've heard from many, many doctors that, you know, they just give me a goal that I'm supposed to attain. But if I don't feel that that is an attainable goal for me, I won't reach it. I won't even work on it. I'll just be like, okay, yeah, that's a stupid idea. I won't even bother. So the goals has to come from you as a patient. And then you use this team of carefully selected professionals to help you get there in different ways. Mm. So yeah, that's my little imagination.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect way to describe it. It really is about you taking control of your health and you being the one in charge.
Yeah.
You know, I hear so many times people, I mean, literally just yesterday, the day before, someone was posting in my Facebook group talking about how her doctor shouted at her. He was shouting at her because she was refusing to take statins.
Yeah.
And thankfully, she held her ground.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable. Even if they have a strong opinion that you are doing something contrary to your best health, they need to find a way to get that over to you. You're the one in charge. You're not there to do what they tell you to do. Yes, you're there to take their advice, but it's you who's in charge. And that's one of the things I love about keto and low carb, actually. When people do discover it and get interested in it, it gives them confidence and it gives them the feeling of power that they are the ones in charge.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject and you talking about what you're doing, yeah, where can people find you? Can people work with you if they want to online? How does all that work?
Absolutely. I have a lot of things going on at the moment, but you know, just go to my website, hannahboetius.com. I'm sure you can link it in some show notes.
Absolutely.
Or follow me on social media and just contact me. Just start a conversation. I won't know if you need help unless you tell me. So whatever it is, let me know and we'll go from there. So yeah, definitely find me somewhere.
Well, that's super easy. The other thing I wanted to talk about was Low Carb Universe.
Oh, yeah,
I have to say, out of all the conferences, this is the one that I've been green with envy over. I assume it's not happening this year, but it's held in Mallorca in November, which is a fabulous time of year, as we've just been talking about. Everything's been getting a bit grim weather-wise, but there's a lovely spot where it's lovely weather. But it feels to me, conferences are great. I've been to a couple, as you know, probably. I've been really involved with Keto Fest, really enjoyed Low Carb Denver, very science heavy, very intense, you know, information overload, so stimulating. Low Carb Universe to me sounds like a holiday with the benefits of some conference stuff thrown in. It sounds luxurious. It sounds like a wonderful place to be. It sounds very informal, where you get to spend real quality time with the speakers and not just see a presentation. It sounds like all the right food is there, great company. I mean, that's my impression of it, but you tell us about it, because like I say, green with envy, and not a million miles from me either.
Wow, thank you so much. And if that is your impression of it, then I must say I'm selling it well. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what I want to achieve, what we want to achieve. And that is exactly as you say. It's a very immersive experience. You can use it, for example, as a kickstart if you're interested in a sugar-free, real food lifestyle. Or you can use it as a sort of top-up of your knowledge, because we do meet in beautiful, wonderful Mallorca, right in the Mediterranean Ocean. And everything is beautiful. And it's in right on the beach at a little fisher's village or old fisher's village. And, you know, you have the beach right outside, you fall asleep to the sound of the waves, you wake up to the sound of the waves, it's all beautiful like that. But it's also, or rather, and in addition, I also try to collect some of the world's top-notch speakers within exactly that. Healthy, sugar-free, mostly low-carb, but mainly real food lifestyles. Mm-hmm. So we've had fantastic speakers from all over the world, from West Coast USA to Australia and everything in between, who've just shared, you know, amazing knowledge, because we mix lectures. We have lectures in the morning. We don't even start, you know, at 7 a.m. like some of the conferences do. We start at a leisurely pace at 9 o'clock in the morning so that everyone has had time to go for their morning runs or go to the spa or the gym or whatever, or had breakfast. And then we start at 9 o'clock, and the whole morning we're listening to really interesting, insightful presentations, jam-packed with knowledge. And then we eat a beautiful lunch together, which is buffet style. So you can choose exactly what you need to sort of get for your nutritional profile and for your preferences. And all of the food is mainly Mallorcan. Of course, that is a little bit difficult when it is an island. So not all of it, but mainly Mallorcan, and mainly also organic. So it's all very good quality. And then in the afternoon, we jump into workshops so that you can get into the questions and issues that you really burn a little bit extra for. Because I know also at some of the conferences, some of the topics, you're like, okay, you know what? I couldn't, like, it's not at all my wheelhouse. I don't, you know, really care that much. So that's why we've added sort of workshops with the speakers, so that you can really get into these pain points that you are experiencing, and you can join us as a so-called normal person or, you know, as a professional, depending on your needs, and everyone has something to take away from it. And then after the workshops are done, we have sort of a, a little buffer time before we gather again for dinner. Same sort of concept as the lunch, different foods, of course. And we really enjoy seeing the sunset over this sort of bay into the Mediterranean Ocean. And it's quite relaxed. Also, when we have the workshops, we also mix that up with, for example, yoga or dancing on the beach, or you can do your own thing if you want to move in some other way, go for a hike or a bike tour or whatever it is that you feel that you need, because health is such an individual thing that there needs to be space for everyone to be able to do their own stuff. And it's also immersive in that way that we all stay at the same hotel. Mm. We stay there, the event is there, the food is there, everything is in this one place, so that you can really get to know, first of all, other guests, fellow guests, but also so that you can sort of stop one of the speakers in the staircase and be like, hey, you know what? You said something about blah, blah, blah. I'd like to know more about that. Let's have a chat at some point, or let's go have a coffee, whatever it is. So that it becomes, you know, you get so much, you get much more out of it sort of thing than when maybe at other conferences or other events where you are sort of staying in different places and you're not eating together and you can't, you know, arranging for a coffee is sometimes a hassle. We've tried to take all of that inconvenience of an event out of it and just put everyone in the same place to enjoy some beautiful days together while learning, while getting a kick up the backside, perhaps, if that's needed, to be inspired and to be maybe even a little bit challenged.
Mm. A very different experience. I love how it feels both stimulating and very relaxed, and that you have ample opportunity to make it about you too, that you can get what you need out of it and you can get the answers you want, that is often so difficult to get at these fast-paced conferences. You know, like you were saying, there'll be a speaker maybe that you particularly resonate with, that you've always wanted to ask them about something that really resonated with you when you saw them speak once, but you want to have a half-hour conversation over coffee. And that's never going to be possible normally at one of the other conferences.
Yeah, we're also limited to 100 people tops. So it is a smaller event. It is more inclusive. It's more immersive in that way, because you really do, you get what you take out of it sort of thing. And you get the opportunity to do that too. So yeah. And you're right. Of course, it doesn't happen this year. I postponed it due to obvious reasons. But aiming for 2021 from the 10th till the 14th of November. Join us.
Fantastic. And presumably people can book now if they want to.
Absolutely. Website is open.
I guess you probably had some bookings, did you, already for this year that have had to be? Yeah, I would assume that. You just said 10 to 14th. I imagine quite a few people. Is there a deal there with the hotel to make it a week? It sounds something like to me like I would want to go and make a full week out of it.
Yes, there is. The hotel closes with us at noon on Sunday when we anyways finish the event. But of course, you can stay there the week before or sort of the few days before to make it a whole week. And of course, there are special rates for that.
Fantastic. Well, it's definitely on my wish list. So one of these years, I will be there because, like I say, from the get-go, when I first heard about it, green with envy.
Yeah, it would have been our fourth year. But now, because none of us get older or none of the events are actually happening, we're saving that till next year. So...
No, they absolutely are. They're just all being postponed. I'm allegedly 50 this year, but no, I've postponed it.
No, you're 49 and a half.
That's right. I'm going to be 50 next year. And actually, it works really well because my sister's going to be 40 and our birthdays are only 2 or 3 weeks apart. So we're going to have a joint bash next year.
Fantastic. Ooh, 90th birthday bash.
It's about that time of year, actually. Come to think of it.
Your birthday present.
It sounds like that should be a 50th birthday present, doesn't it?
Sounds amazing. I can't imagine anything better.
No, it sounds perfect. I hadn't thought of it until now, but yes, I'm writing it down. Well, it has been so fascinating talking to you today. I've really enjoyed it. Is there anything we haven't covered before we get to the top tip, which always ends the show? Is there anything that you were hoping I was going to ask you that you haven't managed to get out there yet?
I feel we've been quite extensive. in this conversation, both in terms of time and topics. I'm quite happy. Just let that melt in first. And if there's any questions anywhere, you know where to find me. I just mentioned it a couple of minutes ago. So find me and, let me know what I can do for you.
I'll make it super easy. The link will be in the show notes, but I'll also put it in the description. So wherever you're listening, whatever podcatcher, go to the details or the description below and there'll be a handy link for you to just click. Perfect. And get straight to Hannah.
Thank you.
So we're at that point. It's top tip time. What have you got for us? I feel like it's going to be a good one.
I am so ready. No, it's actually quite a basic thing. It's, like you said, one of those, epiphanies. But it's the fact that there's, no matter where you are at today, no matter how bad you think your health is or how far you think you've gone in one direction or another, there's always, 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 always something, a little baby step that you can do in order to improve your health.
Brilliant. I like that. And it's very true. No matter where you are, whether you feel like you're at rock bottom and you can't imagine taking a step, there is a tiny little step you can do to improve. Yeah. And it might be really, really tiny. Or even if you think you've got everything licked, there's still another step you can do to improve.
Maybe it's just something as easy as following someone you admire on social media. That's just that one click takes you that little step further into, starting your own health journey, or maybe restarting it or redoing it if you didn't do it right the first time, or according to your own needs. So it can be the tiniest little thing.
Absolutely. You haven't got to worry about getting to where you think you need to be straight away, because that does feel, or at least it can feel, overwhelming.
Hugely so.
For me anyway, that just shuts me down and I end up doing absolutely nothing at all. Whereas, having that in the back of your mind as a goal, but just making your real present goal a tiny little step, suddenly becomes achievable, doesn't it?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. It really has been a great pleasure spending time with you today, Hannah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on, Daisy, and I cannot wait to see you somewhere in the world soon.
Likewise. To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Maya Angelou. Forgive yourself for not knowing what you didn't know before you learned it. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.